I'm not hitting on you. I was hoping we could hang out with some of your frat brothers tonight. Maybe you could, set me up with one of them.
Are you serious?
He exclaims. No fucking way. You're too good for any of those idiots, and I'm pretty sure Allie would kill me if I hooked you up with one of them. Besides, he clams up abruptly. Besides what? I demand. He doesn't answer. Finish that sentence, Sean.
I'd rather not.
I'd rather you did. My suspicion snaps into overdrive. Oh my God, I gasp. Do you know why every guy on campus is suddenly treating me like I have an STD?
Maybe, he says. Maybe.
When he doesn't answer, I groan in frustration. I swear to God, if you don't tell me what you know, I'll.
Okay. He interrupts. I'll tell you.
And then he does. And my response is a loud shriek of outrage. He did what? 20 minutes later, I burst through the doors of Breyer's Hockey Arena. Cold air immediately slaps my cheeks, but it doesn't succeed in cooling the fire burning inside me. It's 5:30, which means Garrett and the team have just finished practice, so I bypass the rink doors and march right to the locker rooms in the back of the building. I'm so pissed off that my whole body is trembling from the force of my anger. Garrett has officially stepped over the line. No. He's so far past the line that I can't even see the stupid line. And there's no way I'm letting him get away with this ludicrous, juvenile bullshit. I reach the locker room door as one of the players walks out of it. Is Garrett in there? I bark. He looks startled to see me. Yeah, but. I bulldoze past him and grab the door handle. The guy protests from behind. I don't think you should go in the. I burst into the locker room and. Penises! Sweet Jesus! Penises everywhere! Horror slams into me as I register what I'm seeing. Oh, God. I've stumbled onto a penis convention. Big penises and small penises and fat penises and penis-shaped penises. It doesn't matter which direction I move my head because everywhere I look, I see penises. My mortified gasp draws the attention of every penis, guy, in the room. In a heartbeat, towels snap up and hands cover junk and bodies shuffle around while I stand in the front of the room blushing like a tomato. Wellesley? A bare-chested Logan grins at me, one shoulder propped up against his locker. It looks like he's trying very hard not to laugh. Penis! Logan! I blurt out. Hi! I do my best to avoid making visual contact with the half-naked males milling in the room, all of whom are either grinning in amusement or blanching in alarm. I'm looking for Garrett. With a barely restrained smirk, Logan hooks his thumb at a doorway in the back, which I assume leads to the showers because steam is rolling out of it. Thanks. I shoot him a grateful look and head in that direction, just as someone emerges from the steamy space. Dean appears, and I see his penis. Hey, Wellesley, he drawls. Completely unfazed by my presence, he strolls naked toward his locker as if finding me in here is a daily occurrence for him. I charge forward, debating whether I should close my eyes, but luckily all the showers have saloon-type doors and are divided by partitions. As I march down the tiled floor, heads swivel my way. One of the heads belongs to Bertie, whose eyes widen when I walk past him. Hannah? He squeaks. I ignore him and keep walking until I spot a familiar back. My gaze conducts a quick double check, and yep, golden skin, tattoo, dark hair. It's Garrett, all right. At the sound of my footsteps, he twists around and gapes at the sight of me.
Wellesley?
I stalk up to the half door, level him with my meanest scowl, and shout, "What is the matter with you?" Chapter 44. Garrett.
I'm grinning like the town idiot, and now is not the time to be grinning like the town idiot, not when I'm buck naked in a room full of showering dudes and my girlfriend is glaring daggers at me. But I'm so happy to see her that I can't control my facial muscles. My eyes eat up the sight of her, her gorgeous face, dark hair pulled back in a ponytail with a pink hair thingy, infuriated green eyes. She's so damn hot when she's mad at me. "It's nice to see you too, baby," I answer cheerfully. "How was your break?"
"Don't you baby me, and don't ask about my break because you don't deserve to know about it."
Hannah glowers at me, then shifts her attention to the three hockey players in the neighboring stalls.
"For the love of Pete, would you guys just rinse off and skedaddle already? I'm trying to yell at your captain."
I choke back a laugh, which ends up spilling out when my teammates snap to attention like they've been issued a command by a drill sergeant. Showers turn off and towels come out, and a moment later, Hannah and I are alone. I shut off the faucet and turn around. The shower door does a good job of hiding my downstairs area, but all Hannah has to do is peek over and she'll get an eyeful of my quickly hardening dick, who is unbelievably happy to see her. But she doesn't sneak a peek. She simply keeps glaring at me.
"You invoked a campus-wide hands-off law? Are you kidding me?"
I'm not at all remorseful as I meet her eyes. "Of course I did."
"Oh my God! You are unbelievable."
She shakes her head in disbelief.
"Who does that, Garrett? You can't just go around and tell all the guys at this school that they're not allowed to touch me or you'll kick their asses."
"I didn't tell all the guys. Do I look like I have that kind of time?" I flash a grin. "I told a few key people and made sure they spread the word."
"What, if you can't have me, no one else can?"
she says darkly. I snicker. "Well, that's just insane. I'm not a psycho, babe. I was doing it for your sake." Her jaw drops.
"How the hell do you figure that?"
"Because you're in love with me, and you don't want to date anyone else. But see, I was afraid your stubborn self would try to do it just to back up your cover story, so I had to take some preventative measures." I prop my forearms on the stall door. "I knew if you went out with anyone else, you'd end up regretting it. And then you'd feel like an ass when you finally came to your senses and, well, I wanted to spare you all that pain and suffering." "You're welcome." She looks stunned for a moment. Then she starts to laugh. Jesus, I've missed the sound of her laughter. I'm tempted to hop over the little door and kiss the crap out of her, but I don't get the chance.
"What the hell is going on in here?"
Hannah jumps in surprise when Coach Jensen appears in the shower area.
"Oh, hey, Coach," I call out. "Not what it looks like."
His dark brows knit in a displeased frown.
"It looks like you're taking a shower in front of your girlfriend, in my locker room."
"Okay, then, yeah, it's what it looks like. But I promise it's all very PG. Well, except for the fact that I'm naked. But don't worry, no kinky shit is going to happen."
I grin at him. I'm trying to win her back. Coach's mouth opens, then closes, then opens again. I can't tell if he's amused or pissed or ready to wash his hands of this whole thing. Finally, he nods and opts for option number 3.
"Carry on."
Coach shakes his head to himself as he ambles off, and I turn back to Hannah in time to see her trying to sneak away.
"Oh, hell no," I announce. "No way, Wellesley."
I snatch my towel and wrap it around my waist as I stumble out of the stall.
"You're not running off on me."
"I came here to yell at you,"
she stammers, her gaze dipping to her feet.
"And now I'm done yelling at you, so..."
She yelps when my wet hands cup her cheeks to force her to look at me.
Great. You're done yelling. Now I want you to talk to me, and you're not leaving until you do.
I don't want to talk.
Tough cookies. I search her agonized expression. Why did you break up with me?
I already told you.
I know what you told me. I didn't believe you then, and I don't believe you now. I set my jaw. Why did you break up with me?
A shaky breath leaves her mouth.
Because we were moving too fast.
Bullshit. Why did you break up with me?
Because I wanted to see other people.
Try again. Why did you break up with me?
When she doesn't answer, frustration blasts through me, and I react by crashing my mouth down on hers. I kiss her roughly, desperately, the days and weeks of missing her catching up to me and pouring out in the form of deep, hungry kisses that leave us both breathless. She doesn't pull away. She just kisses me back with the same unchecked passion, her hands clinging to my wet shoulders like she's lost at sea and I'm her life preserver. That's how I know she still loves me. That's how I know she missed me as much as I missed her. And that's why I wrench my mouth away and whisper, "Why did you break up with me?" Her anguished gaze locks with mine. Her bottom lip quivers. And as several seconds tick by, I wonder if she's going to answer me. I wonder if...
Because your father told me to.
The shock almost knocks me off my feet. As my equilibrium turns into a seesaw, I drop my hands to my sides and stare at her, unable to comprehend what I just heard. I swallow, and I swallow again. What?
Your father told me to end it,
she admits.
He said that if I didn't, he'd...
I hold up my hand to silence her. I'm too stunned to listen, too enraged to move. I force myself to breathe, long, calming breaths that help steady my wonky balance and clear my foggy head. Then I exhale in a slow rush and run a hand through my damp hair. Here's what's gonna happen, I say quietly. You're gonna wait outside for me while I get dressed. And then you and I are going to... I don't care where we go. Your dorm, my car, anywhere. We're gonna go somewhere, and you're gonna tell me every word that son of a bitch said to you. I take another breath. You're going to tell me everything.
Hannah. Garrett doesn't say a word as I recount everything that happened between his father and me. We're in my room because the arena is closer to the dorms than it is to Garrett's house, and he was in too much of a hurry to have this conversation. But all he's done so far is loom over me with his arms crossed and his brow furrowed, listening intently as my confession spills out of my mouth like confetti. I can't stop talking. I recite his dad's threats verbatim. I explain why I went along with him. I beg him to understand that I did it because I love him and want him to be successful. And through it all, Garrett says nothing. He doesn't even blink. Will you please say something? I mumble when I finish talking and he still hasn't said a word. His gray eyes fix on my face. I can't tell if he's angry or annoyed, if he's disappointed or upset. All those emotions would make sense to me. But the response I get makes no sense at all. Garrett starts to laugh. Deep, husky rumbles that bring a frown to my lips. His brow relaxes and his arms fall to his sides as he sinks down on the bed beside me, his broad shoulders trembling with mirth. You think this is funny?
I demand, genuinely offended. I've been a total misery zombie this past month, and he finds it amusing?
No, I think it's a damn shame,
he says between chuckles. What's a shame?
This?
He gestures between us.
You and me
the whole fucking month we missed out on?
He lets out a heavy sigh.
Why didn't you just tell me?
My throat closes up. Because I knew what you would say. Another chuckle pops out of his mouth.
I highly doubt that, but okay, humor me, what would I have said?
I don't understand his weird-ass reaction, and it's making me uneasy. You would have told me that you didn't care if your father cut you off because you're not gonna let him control you or us. Garrett nods.
Yep, you're on track so far, what else?
Then you would have said you care about me more than you care about his stupid money.
Yup.
And you would have let him cut you off.
Right again.
My stomach lurches. He said you aren't eligible for financial aid and that you wouldn't be able to get a bank loan. Garrett nods again.
Both true.
You would have had to clean out your savings account to pay for next term's tuition and then what? We both know you can't afford rent and expenses and car payments when you're not working, so that means you would need to get a job and...
I'm gonna stop you there, baby.
The smile he gives me is infinitely tender.
So, let's back up. I let my father cut me off. Ask me what I would have said next.
I bite the inside of my cheek, a little too hard, so I soothe the sting with my tongue. What? Garrett leans closer and sweeps his fingertips over my cheek.
I would have said, don't worry, babe. I'm turning 21 in a few weeks, and my grandparents left me a trust fund that I can access on January 2nd.
I suck in a shocked breath. Wait, what? He lightly pinches my bottom lip, shaking his head in frustration.
My grandparents left me an inheritance, Hannah. My dad didn't know about it because my mom signed all the papers behind his back. Gran and Gramps hated the old bastard. They really fucking hated him. And they saw how controlling he was when it came to me and Hockey. They were afraid he might try to access the trust and do whatever he wanted with the funds, so they made sure I was taken care of. They left me enough money to pay my father back for everything he's ever paid for, enough to pay for the rest of my education and all my expenses, and probably enough to sustain me for a few years once I graduate.
My mind reels. I'm having trouble processing the information. Really?
Really,
he confirms. As the significance of what he's just told me sinks in, I experience a flood of pure horror. Sweet baby Jesus. Is he telling me I broke up with him for no reason? Garrett sees my expression and chuckles.
I bet you feel pretty stupid, huh?
My mouth falls open, but I can't formulate any words. I can't believe I'm so... God, he's right. I'm so fucking stupid. I was trying to do the right thing, I moan miserably. I know how important Hockey is to you. I didn't want you to lose that. He sighs again.
I know, and trust me, that's the only reason I'm not pissed off at you right now. I mean, I'm annoyed to shit that you didn't just talk to me about it, but I understand why you didn't.
His eyes flash.
That asshole had no right to do that. I swear, I'm gonna...
He stops and puffs out a breath.
Actually, I'm gonna do absolutely nothing. Not worth my time and energy, remember?
Does he know about the trust fund now? A triumphant gleam enters his eyes.
Oh, he knows. My grandparents' executor couriered him a check yesterday. I estimated what I owed him and threw some extra cash on top of it, and he called last night and yelled at me for about 20 minutes before I hung up on him.
Garrett's tone goes serious.
Oh, and there's something else you should know. Cindy dumped his ass.
Shock and relief war inside me. Really?
Yep. Apparently, she packed her bags a week after Thanksgiving and never looked back. That was another reason he was so pissed off on the phone. He thinks we said something to make her leave. Garrett's cheeks hollow in anger. Son of a bitch still can't take responsibility for anything he does. He can't fathom how it might be his fault that she left.
My head continues to spin. I'm happy Cindy extricated herself from that abusive relationship, but I'm not happy about the month Garrett and I were apart. I'm not happy that I allowed Phil Graham to scare me into giving up the guy I love. I'm sorry, I say softly. I'm so sorry, Garrett, for everything. He reaches for my hand.
Yeah, me too.
Don't you dare apologize. You have nothing to be sorry about. I'm the one who tried to be all heroic and broke up with you for your own good. I groan. God, I can't even be selfless without screwing it up. He snickers.
It's okay. At least you're hot. And don't get me started on your stripper tits.
I squeak when he suddenly cups my breasts over my sweater and gives them a hearty squeeze. He makes a contented little noise as he rubs his palms over my quickly hardening nipples.
Oh, I've missed these. You don't know how fucking much.
A laugh flies out. Seriously? You're going straight to second base when we haven't even officially gotten back together? His lips latch onto my neck, and his tongue darts out for a teasing lick.
As far as I'm concerned, we were never broken up.
Then he nibbles on my earlobe, eliciting a flurry of shivers.
So, the way I see it, we could hug and kiss and cry, which will take about, what, 20 minutes? And then 20 more minutes where I forgive you and you vow your undying love to me. Maybe 10 minutes of you giving me head to make up for all the time we've lost. I punch him in the arm. But what's the point of wasting more time when we can get right to the good part?
My lips quiver in amusement. And what exactly is the good part? Before I can blink, I'm on my back with the deliciously heavy weight of Garrett's body on top of me. He flashes his trademark grin, that sexy, crooked smile that never fails to make my heart pound, and then his mouth covers mine in a hungry kiss.
This.
He sucks on my lower lip and rotates his hips seductively,
is the good part.
I wrap my arms around him and hold him tight against me, and it's so familiar, so wonderfully perfect, that the love in my heart overflows and stings my eyes. I love you, Garrett, I choke out. His husky voice tickles my lips.
I love you, Hannah.
Then he kisses me. And everything in my world is right again. Chapter 45, Hannah. March.
Why is your ex-crush in my living room?
Garrett drops the whispered accusation in my ear as he comes up beside me. My gaze shifts to Justin, who is on the couch playing a complicated-looking shooting video game with Tucker. Then I turn back to Garrett, who looks more amused than pissed. Because he's my friend and I invited him. Deal with it.
You don't think it's kind of a dick move to invite him? I mean, the football team did shit all this season and now he has to come celebrate with a hockey crowd for making it to the semifinals. And he has to be around the perfect specimen of manhood who stole you away?
Garrett's gray eyes twinkle.
You're a terrible person.
Oh, shut it. He's happy that you guys are going to the Frozen Four. I bring my lips close to his ear, and don't tell anyone this or I'll kill you, but he's been hooking up with Stella this past month.
For real?
Garrett's jaw drops as he glances across the room where Stella, Dex, and Allie are in the middle of an animated conversation with Logan and Sims. It's still kind of bizarre seeing my friends interacting with Garrett's friends, but we've all hung out dozens of times over the past 3 months, so I'm starting to get used to it. From his spot next to Dex, Logan senses me watching them and lifts his head and, well, that's something I haven't gotten used to. The look he gives me burns with unmistakable longing, and it's not the first time he's looked at me like that. When I brought it up to Garrett, just once, in the most awkward conversation ever, he simply sighed and said,
"He'll get over it."
No anger on Garrett's part, no resentment, just that one measly sentence which hasn't done much to soothe my worries. I don't like the idea that Garrett's best friend might have feelings for me, but Logan hasn't tried to make a move on me, and he sure as hell hasn't talked to me about it, so that's a relief, I guess. But I really do hope he gets over whatever he's feeling, because as much as I like the guy, I'm totally and unequivocally in love with his best friend, and that's never going to change. This semester has been a busy one for us. I'm yet again rehearsing, this time for the spring showcase, and this time it is a duet with Dexter, and the two of us are having a blast working together. Garrett and the team have been killing it in the postseason. The championship is next week, and the venue for it just happens to be the Wells Fargo Center, home of the Philadelphia Flyers, which means that, yep, I'm going to be watching the final game live and staying at Aunt Nicole's for the 3 days the team is in Philly. There's no doubt in my mind that the team will crush it. Garrett and the guys have worked hard this season, and if they don't win this final game, I'll eat my hat. Either that, or give my man lots and lots of consolation sex. Such a chore.
"Look what the cat dragged in,"
Garrett says suddenly, and I turn around to see Birdie and Natalie appear in the doorway where Garrett and I are lurking. Their faces are flushed, and their expressions are secretive, leaving no doubt as to why they're late for the party. I give Nat a hug of greeting, then smile at Birdie, who responds to Garrett's taunt with a defensive look.
"Hey, I already told you I'm against this party. It's bad luck to celebrate before you've even won." "Nah, we've got this in the bag, man."
Garrett grins and leans in to smack a kiss on my cheek.
"Besides, I've already won the most important prize of all."
I'm pretty sure my cheeks turn into a pair of tomatoes. Natalie groans good-naturedly, but Birdie, to my surprise, just nods in approval.
"See?"
Garrett informs us as he slings an arm around my shoulder. "I'm allowed to say stuff like that to Birdie because I know he won't make fun of me." "Well, he should," I grumble, "because that line was cheesy as hell."
"Oh, shut it,"
he mimics.
"You like it when I'm romantic."
"Yep, I really do." Birdie and Nat wander off to say hi to everyone, but Garrett and I stay in our little corner. He tugs me toward him and kisses me, and even though I'm anti-PDA, it's impossible to think about social etiquette when Garrett Graham is kissing me. His lips are warm and firm, his tongue hot and wet as he slides it into my mouth for a fleeting taste. I part my lips eagerly, wanting more, but he chuckles and tweaks a strand of my hair.
"Stop being inappropriate, Hannah. We're in public."
"Ha, like I can't see your boner." His gaze drops to his crotch and he sighs when he notices the bulge straining against his jeans.
"For fuck's sake, Wellesley, you get me hard without me even noticing."
He frowns.
"Damn it, now I'm gonna have to leave my own party so we can go upstairs and take care of this. Thanks a lot."
I snort. "Dream on. There's no way I'm doing the walk of shame afterward in front of all our friends." His face collapses.
"You're ashamed of me?"
"Don't give me that little boy trickery." I poke him in the chest. It doesn't work on me anymore.
"Little boy,"
he echoes. A wicked smile curves his mouth as he angles his body so that he's facing away from the room. Then he takes my hand and plants it directly over his hard-on.
"Does this feel little or boyish to you?"
Shivers fly up my spine. Oh no, now I'm turned on. As my heart pounds and my body tingles, I let out an annoyed groan and grab his hand. "Fine, let's go upstairs."
"Nope, I changed my mind about that. We're gonna stay down here and enjoy the party."
I drop his hand like a hot potato and scowl deeply. You're such a vagina tease. Garrett laughs.
Yeah, but you still love me.
Tiny butterflies of happiness take flight in my stomach and dance around my heart. I take his hand again and lace our fingers together. Yeah, I murmur with a smile. I still love you. Epilogue. Garrett.
My father waits outside the arena when the team bursts out the back doors. Dean had somehow gotten his hands on an old-school boombox, and he has it propped up on his shoulder as Queen's We Are the Champions blasts out of the speakers. There's nobody around to hear the victory song but us, and the family and friends who made it out to Philly to watch us play. Applause breaks out as we stroll up like the champions we are, and several of my bonehead teammates take exaggerated bows before heading over to say hello to the people who came out to see us. I fucking did it. I mean, it was a team effort. No, a team domination. Because for the first time in years, the Frozen Four championship game was a shutout. Sims didn't let our opponents score, not even once. And it seems fitting that the three lamplighters on our side came from me, Tuck, and Birdie, respectively. I'm proud of my team. I'm proud of myself for leading us here. It's the perfect end to the perfect season, and it gets a little more perfect when Hannah rushes over and hurls herself into my arms. Oh my God, that was the best game ever, she declares before kissing me so hard my lips feel bruised. I grin at her enthusiasm. Did you like the little gun finger I flashed you after that goal? All for you, baby. She grins back. Sorry to burst your bubble, but you were actually pointing at the old guy a few seats over. He totally freaked out and started shouting to everyone that you scored that goal for him. And then I heard him ask his wife if maybe you knew that he was just diagnosed with diabetes, so I didn't have the heart to tell him who the goal was really for. I break down in laughter. Why is nothing ever simple with us?
Hey,
she protests. We're more interesting this way. I can't argue with that. From the corner of my eye, I see my father lurking near the bus, but I don't make eye contact with him. In fact, I notice that nobody is looking at him. Not me, not Hannah, not any of my teammates. A few months ago, I told the guys the truth about my dad, because the conversation I had with Hannah about life not being fair and my father still being revered had stuck with me. So after the new year, when one of our sophomore D-men asked me if I could get him a Phil Graham autograph, I could no longer hold it in. I sat the boys down, even Coach was there, and told them everything. Needless to say, it was damn uncomfortable and pretty fucking intense. But when all was said and done, my teammates proved to me that I'm not just their captain, but their brother. And now, as we all head for the bus, not a single pair of eyes travels in my superstar father's direction. I'll see you back at campus, I say to Hannah. She nods.
Yep, Uncle Mark is driving me back now, so I should be there around the same time you guys get in.
Call me when you're home. Love you, babe.
Love you, too.
I plant one last kiss on her lips, then climb onto the bus and settle in my usual seat next to Logan. As the door shuts and the driver pulls away, I don't glance out the window to look at the tall, surly man who's still standing in the parking lot. I don't look back these days. I only look forward.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of The Mistake, book number 2 in the off-campus series, Free. This has been an Audible Studios production of The Deal, written by L. Kennedy, narrated by Lorelei Avalon, producer Mike Charzik, copyright 2015 by L. Kennedy, production copyright 2015 by Audible Inc., Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc. And now, a free preview of The Mistake, book number 2 in the Off-Campus series. Chapter 1, Logan. April.
Lusting over your best friend's girlfriend sucks. First off, there's the awkward factor, as in it's really fucking awkward. I can't speak for all men, but I'm pretty sure that no guy wants to leave his bedroom and bump into the girl of his dreams after she's just spent the whole night in his best friend's arms. Then there's the self-loathing element. This one's a given, because it's kind of hard not to hate yourself when you're fantasizing about the love of your best friend's life. At the moment, the awkwardness is definitely winning out. See, I live in a house with very thin walls, which means I can hear every breathy moan that leaves Hannah's mouth, every gasp and sigh, every thump of the headboard smacking the wall as someone else screws the girl I can't stop thinking about. Fun times. I'm on my bed flat on my back and staring up at the ceiling. I'm not even pretending to scroll through my iPod library anymore. I pop the earbuds in with the intention of drowning out the sounds of Garrett and Hannah in the other room, but I still haven't pressed play. I guess I'm in the mood to torture myself tonight. Look, I'm not an idiot. I know she's in love with Garrett. I see the way she looks at him, and I see how they are together. They've been a couple for 6 months now, and not even I, the worst friend on the planet, can deny they're perfect for each other. And hell, Garrett deserves to be happy. He plays it off like he's a cocky son of a bitch, but truth is, he's a goddamn saint. The best center I've ever skated with and the best person I've ever known, and I'm comfortable enough with my hetero status to say that if I did play for the other team, I wouldn't just fuck Garrett Graham, I'd marry him. That's what makes this a trillion times harder. I can't even hate the dude who's tapping the chick I want. No revenge fantasies to be had because I don't hate Garrett, not in the slightest. A door creaks open and footsteps echo in the hallway, and I pray to God that Garrett or Hannah doesn't knock on my door, or open their mouths for that matter, because hearing either of their voices right now will only bum me out even more. Luckily, the loud knock that rattles my doorframe comes from my other roommate, Dean, who waltzes inside without waiting for an invitation. Party at Omega Phi tonight, you down? I dive off my bed faster than you can say pathetic, because a party sounds like a fan-fucking-tastic idea right about now. Getting wasted is a surefire way to stop myself from thinking about Hannah. Actually, no. I want to get wasted and screw someone's brains out. That way, if one of those activities doesn't help me with my don't think about Hannah goal, the other can serve as backup. Hell yeah, I answer, already fumbling around for a shirt. I slip a clean t-shirt over my head and ignore the twinge of pain in my left arm, which is still sore as shit from the bone-jarring body check I took at the championship game last week. But the hit was totally worth it. For the third consecutive year, Breyer's hockey team secured another Frozen Four victory. I guess you can call it the ultimate hat trick. And all the players, myself included, are still reaping the rewards of being 3-time national champions. Dean, one of my fellow defensemen, calls it the 3 P's of victory: parties, praise, and pussy. It's a pretty fair assessment of the situation because I've been on the receiving end of all 3 since our big win. You gonna be the DD? I ask as I throw a black hoodie over my t-shirt and zip it up. My buddy snorts. Did you really just ask me that? I roll my eyes. Right. Whatever was I thinking? The last time Dean Hayward De Laurentiis was sober at a party was... never. Dude drinks like a fish or gets higher than a kite every time he leaves the house, and if you think that affects his performance on the ice in any way, then think again. He's one of those rare creatures who can party like past day Robert Downey Jr. and somehow be as successful and revered as present day Robert Downey Jr.
Don't worry, Tux the DD, Dean tells me, referring to our other roommate, Tucker. The pussy's still hungover from last night, said he needs a break.
Yeah, I don't exactly blame him. Off-season training doesn't start for another couple weeks, and we've all been enjoying the time off a little too much. But that's what happens when you're riding a Frozen Four high. Last year after we won, I was drunk for 2 weeks straight. I'm not looking forward to the off-season. Strength and conditioning and all the hard work it takes to stay in shape are exhausting, but it's even more exhausting when you're working 10-hour shifts at the same time. It's not like I have a choice, though. The workouts are necessary prep for the upcoming season, and the work, well, I made a promise to my brother, and no matter how sick to my stomach it makes me, I can't renege on it. Jeff will skin me alive if I don't fulfill my end of the deal. Our designated driver waits at the front door when Dean and I come downstairs. A reddish-brown beard devours Tucker's entire face, giving him a werewolf vibe. But he's been determined to try out this new look ever since a chick he met at a party last week told him he had a baby face. You know that Yeti beard doesn't make you look more manly, right? Dean says cheerfully as we walk out the door. Tuck shrugs. I was going for rugged, actually. I snicker. Well, it's not that either, baby face. You look like a mad scientist. He flips up his middle finger as he heads for the driver's side of my truck. I settle in the passenger seat while Dean climbs into the pickup bed, saying he wants some fresh air. I think he just wants the wind to mess up his hair in that tousled, sexed-up way girls drop their panties for. FYI, Dean is nauseatingly vain. But he also looks like a male model, so maybe he's allowed to be vain. Tucker starts the engine, and I drum my fingers against my thighs, itching to get going. A lot of students in the Greek system piss me off with their elitist attitudes, but I'm willing to overlook that because, well, hell, because if party throwing was an Olympic sport, every frat and sorority house at Briar would be a gold medalist. As Tuck reverses out of the driveway, my gaze rests on Garrett's black Jeep, all shiny in its parking space while its owner spends the night with the coolest girl on the planet. And enough. This obsession with Hannah Wells is really starting to mess with my head. I need to get laid. ASAP. Tucker is noticeably quiet during the drive to Omega Phi. He might also be frowning, but it's hard to tell considering someone shaved off all of Hugh Jackman's body hair and pasted it on Tuck's face. What's with the silent treatment? I ask lightly. His gaze shifts toward me to offer a sour look, then shifts right back to the road. Oh, come on, is this about all the shit we're giving you about the beard? Exasperation shoots through me. Because that's like the first chapter of Beards for Dummies, bro. If you grow a mountain man beard, your friends will make fun of you. End of chapter. It's not about the beard, he mutters. I wrinkle my forehead. Okay, but you are pissed about something. When he doesn't respond, I push a little harder. What's going on with you? His annoyed eyes meet mine. With me? Nothing. With you? So much I don't even know where to start. He curses softly. You need to stop this shit, man. Now I'm genuinely confused because as far as I can tell, all I've done in the past 10 minutes is look forward to a party. Tucker notices the confusion on my face and clarifies in a grim tone. This thing with Hannah. Although my shoulders stiffen, I try to keep my expression vague. I have no idea what you're talking about. Yep, I've chosen to lie, which is nothing new for me, actually. It seems like all I've done since I came to Briar is lie. I'm totally destined for the NHL, going pro all the way. I love spending my summer as a grease monkey in my dad's shop. It's great pocket money. I'm not lusting over Hannah. She's dating my best friend. Lies, lies, and more lies, because in every one of those instances, the truth is a total bummer, and the last thing I want is for my friends and teammates to feel sorry for me. Save that bullshit for G, Tucker retorts. And by the way, you're lucky he's distracted with all this lovey-dovey stuff, because if he wasn't, he'd definitely notice the way you're acting.
Yeah? And what way is that?
I can't stop the edge in my voice or the defensive set of my jaw. I hate that Tuck knows I have feelings for Hannah. I hate even more that he finally decided to bring up the subject after all these months. Why can't he leave it alone? The situation is already shitty enough without having someone call me on it.
Seriously? Do you want me to list it off for you?
Fine. A dark cloud floats through his eyes as he begins to recite every fucking thing I've felt so guilty about.
You leave the room whenever the two of them enter it. You hide in your bedroom when she stays over. If you guys are in the same room, you stare at her when you think nobody is looking. You...
Okay, I interrupt. I get it.
And don't get me started on your man-whoring.
Tucker grumbles. You've always been a player. But dude, you've hooked up with 5 chicks this week.
So?
So it's Thursday. 5 girls in 4 days. Do the fucking math, John.
Oh, shit. He first named me. Tucker only calls me John when I've really pissed him off.
Except now he's pissed me off, so I first name him right back.
What's wrong with that, John?
Yep, we're both John. I guess we should take a blood oath and form a club or something.
I'm 21 years old,
I continue irritably. I'm allowed to hook up?
No, I should be hooking up because that's what college is all about, having fun and getting laid and enjoying the fuck out of yourself before you go out in the real world and your life turns to shit.
You really want to pretend all these hookups are just some rite of passage in the college experience?
Tucker shakes his head, then lets out a breath and softens his tone.
You can't screw her out of your system, man. You could sleep with 100 women tonight and it still wouldn't make a difference. You need to accept that it's not going to happen with Hannah and move on.
He's absolutely right. I'm well aware that I've been wallowing in my own bullshit and bagging chicks left and right as a distraction. And I'm equally aware that I need to stop partying myself into oblivion, that I need to let go of the tiny little sliver of hope that something might happen and simply accept that it won't.
Maybe I'll get started on that tomorrow, though.
Tonight, I'm sticking to my original plan. Get wasted, get laid, and to hell with everything else.
Grace. I started my freshman year of college as a virgin. I'm beginning to think I'll be ending it as one, too. Not that there's anything wrong with being a card-carrying member of the V Club. So what if I'm about to turn 19? I'm hardly an old maid, and I'm certainly not going to be tarred and feathered on the street for still having an intact hymen. Besides, it's not like I haven't had opportunities to lose my virginity this year. Since I came to Briar University, my best friend has dragged me to more parties than I can count. Guys have flirted with me, sure. A few of them straight up tried to seduce me. One even sent me a picture of his penis with the caption, "It's all yours, baby," which was fine. It was super gross, but I'm sure if I'd truly liked him, I might have been, flattered by the gesture. Maybe. But I wasn't attracted to any of those guys. And unfortunately, all the ones who do catch my eye never even look my way. Until tonight. When Ramona announced we were going to a frat party, I didn't have high hopes for meeting anyone. It seems like every time we go to Greek Row, the frat boys just try to sweet talk me and Ramona into making out. But tonight, I've actually met a guy I kind of sort of like. His name is Matt. He's cute, and he's not giving off any douchebag vibes. Not only is he somewhat sober, but he also speaks in full sentences and hasn't said the word broski even once since we started talking. Or rather, since he started talking. I haven't said much, but I'm perfectly content to stand there and listen, because it gives me time to admire his chiseled jawline and the adorable way his blonde hair curls under his ears. To be honest, it's probably better if I don't talk. Cute guys make me nervous, like tongue-tied, total brain malfunction nervous. All my filters shut off and suddenly I'm telling them about the time I peed my pants in the third grade during a field trip to the maple syrup factory, or how I'm scared of puppets and have mild OCD that could possibly drive me to tidy up your room the moment you turn your head. So, yeah, it's better if I simply smile and nod and toss out the occasional, "Oh, really?" so they know I'm not a mute. Except sometimes that's not possible, especially when the cute guy in question says something that requires an actual answer.
"Want to go outside and smoke this?"
Matt pulls a joint from the pocket of his button-down shirt and holds it in front of me.
"I'd light up here, but Mr. President will kick me out of the frat if I do."
I shift awkwardly. No thanks.
"You don't smoke weed?"
"No, I mean, I have, but I don't do it often. It makes me feel all loopy." He smiles, and two gorgeous dimples appear.
"That's kind of the point of weed."
"Yeah, I guess. But it makes me really tired, too. Oh, and every time I smoke it, I end up thinking about this PowerPoint presentation my dad forced me to watch when I was 13. It had all these statistics about the effects of weed on your brain cells and how, contrary to popular belief, marijuana actually is highly addictive. And after every slide, he'd glare at me and say,
"Do you want to lose your brain cells, Grace? Do you?"
Matt stares at me, and in my head there's a voice shouting, "Abort!" But it's too late. My internal filter has failed me once again, and words keep popping out of my mouth. But I guess that's not as bad as what my mom did. She tries to be the cool parent, so when I was 15, she drove me to this dark parking lot and pulled out a joint and announced that we were going to smoke it together. It was like a scene out of The Wire. Wait, I've never actually seen The Wire. It's about drugs, right? Anyway, I sat there panicking the whole time because I was convinced we were going to get arrested. And meanwhile, my mom kept asking me how I was feeling and whether or not I was enjoying the pot. Miraculously, my lips finally stopped moving. But Matt's eyes have already glazed over.
Yeah. Well,
he clumsily waves the joint around.
"I'm gonna go smoke this. I'll see you later."
I manage to hold in my sigh until he's gone, then release the heavy breath and give myself a mental slap on the wrist. Damn it. I don't know why I bother trying to talk to guys. I go into every conversation nervous I'm gonna embarrass myself, and then I end up embarrassing myself because I'm nervous. Doomed from the start. With another sigh, I head downstairs and search the main floor for Ramona. The kitchen is full of kegs and frat boys, ditto for the dining room. The living room is packed with very loud, very drunk guys and a sea of scantily clad girls. I applaud them for their bravery because the weather outside is frigid and the front door has been opening and closing all night, causing cold air to circulate through the house. Me? I'm nice and toasty in my skinny jeans and tight sweater. I don't see my friend anywhere. As hip-hop music blasts out of the speakers at a deafening volume, I fish my phone out of my purse to check the time and discover that it's close to midnight. Even after 8 months at Briar, I still experience a teeny sense of glee every time I stay out past 11, which was my curfew when I lived at home. My dad was a real stickler for curfews. Actually, he's a real stickler for everything. I doubt he's ever broken a rule in his life. which makes me wonder how he and Mom managed to stay married as long as they did. My free spirit mother is the polar opposite of my stuffy, strict father. But I guess that just proves that the whole opposites attract theory has some merit. Gracie! A female voice shrieks over the music, and the next thing I know, Ramona appears and throws her arms around me in a tight hug. When she pulls back, I take one look at her shining eyes and flushed cheeks and know she's drunk. She's also as scantily clad as most of the other girls in the room, her short skirt barely covering her upper thighs, her red halter top revealing a serious amount of cleavage, and the heels of her leather boots are so high I have no clue how she can walk in them. She looks gorgeous, though, and she's drawing a ton of appreciative stares as she links her arm through mine. I'm pretty sure that when people see us standing side by side, they're scratching their heads and wondering how on earth we could possibly be friends. Sometimes I wonder the same thing. In high school, Ramona was the fun-loving badass who smoked cigarettes behind the building, and I was the good girl who edited the school newspaper and organized all the charity events. If we hadn't been next-door neighbors, Ramona and I probably wouldn't have known the other existed, but walking to school together every day had led to a friendship of convenience, which had then turned into a real bond. So real that when we were looking at colleges, we made sure to apply to all the same schools. And when we both got into Briar, we asked my father to speak to the residence office and arrange for us to be roommates. But even though our friendship started off strong this year, I can't deny that we've drifted apart a little. Ramona has been so obsessed with hooking up and being popular. It's all she ever talks about. And lately, I'm finding that she kind of annoys me. Crap. Even thinking it makes me feel like a shitty friend. I saw you go upstairs with Matt, she hisses in my ear. Did you guys hook up? No, I say glumly. I think I scared him off. Oh no, you told him about your puppet phobia, didn't you? She demands before heaving an exaggerated sigh. Babe, you've got to stop revealing all your crazy up front. Seriously, save all that stuff for later when you're in a relationship with a guy and it's harder for him to run away. I can't help but laugh. Thanks for the advice. So are you ready to go or should we stay a while longer? I glance around the room again. My gaze lands in the corner where two girls in jeans and bras are making out while one of the Omega Phi guys films the passionate display with his iPhone. The sight makes me stifle a groan. $10 says that video will wind up on one of those free porn sites, and the poor girls probably won't find out about it until years from now, when one of them is about to marry a senator and the press digs up all her embarrassing dirt. I wouldn't mind going now, I admit. Yeah, I guess I'm cool with it, too. I raise my eyebrows. Since when are you cool with leaving a party before midnight? A frown puckers her lips. Not much point in staying. Someone already beat me to him. I don't bother asking who she's talking about. It's the same guy she's been talking about since the first day of the semester. Dean Hayward De Laurentiis. Ramona has been obsessed with a gorgeous junior ever since she bumped into him at one of the campus coffee houses. Like, seriously obsessed. She's dragged me to almost all the Briar home games just to watch Dean in action. I have to admit, the guy is hot. He's also a major player, according to the gossip mill, but unfortunately for Ramona, Dean doesn't date freshmen or sleep with them, which is all she really wants from him anyway. Ramona has never gone out with anybody for more than a week. The only reason she even wanted to come to this party tonight was because she heard that Dean would be here. But clearly the guy isn't fucking around with that no freshman rule. No matter how many times Ramona throws herself at him, he always leaves with somebody else. Let me just use the washroom first, I tell her. Meet you outside? Okay, but be quick. I told Jasper we're leaving and he's waiting in the car. She darts off toward the front door, leaving me with a prickle of resentment. Nice that she asked me if I wanted to leave when she'd already made the decision for us. But I swallow the irritation, reminding myself that Ramona has always done that and that it never bothered me in the past. Honestly, if it wasn't for her making decisions and forcing me to step out of my comfort zone, I probably would have spent my entire high school career in the newspaper office, writing the advice column and offering life tips to students without having ever experienced life myself. Still, sometimes I wish Ramona would at least ask me what I thought about something before deciding that we should do it. The downstairs bathroom has a long line, so I weave through the crowd and head upstairs to where Matt and I had been talking before. I'm just approaching the bathroom when the door swings open and a pretty blonde saunters out. She jerks when she spots me, then offers a smug little smile and adjusts the bottom of a dress that can only be described as indecent. I can actually see the crotch of her pink panties. As my cheeks heat up, I avert my gaze in embarrassment, waiting until she's at the stairs before I reach for the doorknob. I barely get my hand on it when the door opens again and someone else walks out. My gaze collides with the most vivid blue eyes I have ever seen. It only takes a second for recognition to dawn on me, and when it does, my face burns hotter. It's John Logan. Yep. John Logan, a.k.a. the star defenseman of the hockey team. I know this is not just because Ramona has been stalking his friend Dean for months, but because his sexy, chiseled face was on the cover of the school newspaper last week. Since the team's championship win, the paper has run feature interviews with all the players, and I'm not going to lie, Logan's interview was the only one I paid attention to, because the guy is smoking hot. Like the blonde, he looks startled to find me in the hallway. And, like the blonde, he recovers quickly from his surprise and flashes me a grin. Then he zips up his pants. Oh, my God. I cannot believe he just did that. My gaze involuntarily drops to his groin, but he doesn't seem bothered by that either. He cocks a brow, shrugs, and then walks away. Wow. Okay. That should have icked me out. Forget the very obvious bathroom hookup. The zipper move alone should have placed him directly in douchebag territory. Instead, knowing he'd just fooled around with that girl in the bathroom evokes a rush of jealousy I don't expect. I'm not saying I want to have a random hookup in a bathroom, but fine, I'm lying. I totally want that. At least with John Logan, I do. The thought of his hands and lips all over me unleashes a flurry of hot shivers that shimmy up my spine. Why can't I fool around with guys in bathrooms? I'm in college, damn it. I'm supposed to be having fun and making mistakes and finding myself, but I haven't done jack shit this year. I've been living vicariously through Ramona, watching my bad girl best friend take risks and try new things, while I, the good girl, stand there clinging to the cautious approach to life that my father drilled into me when I was still in diapers. Well, I'm tired of being cautious, and I'm tired of being the good girl. The semester is almost over. I have two exams to study for and a psych paper to write. But who says I can't do all that and still squeeze some actual fun in there? There are only a few weeks left in my freshman year, and you know what? I plan on making good use of them. We hope you enjoyed this free preview of The Mistake, book number 2 in the off-campus series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.